please tell me the names of these five reactions. What's the first one? And this is the clue that, yes, for the first time, other than like the green yard reaction or something like that, that I really do want you to know names of reactions, because they're common enough names. Like, I myself, as a chemist, get frustrated when other chemists use all these names to talk about reactions. It's like, why can't you just call it SN2 instead of whatever fancy name they come up with? But these particular reactions, they're almost always expressed as the name of the reaction. In fact, for chemists that are going into grad school, you have to learn a battery of what are called name reactions. So you do need to know the names for all of the alpha reactions we've learned, because every one we've learned a name for, even if it's not a proper name. Alkylation, for example. Halogenation. We've learned alpha, alkylation, and halogenation, which those don't show up as this in this set. But what are the ones that we've learned? What is this first one? The stork-enamine synthesis, which we still need to talk about the mechanism of, don't we? What is the second one going to be? Claisen. How do we know that it's a claisen condensation? Because you have an ester as a starting material. What is the next reaction? It's also a claisen. I might even accept claisen as the right answer, but it is a Diekmann, more specifically, because it is the intramolecular claisen. ESL students, or even the local homegrown students, spelling, I'm not going to mark off for, but at least try. Do you all know the little, I know this is an aside, but do you all know the trick for German to know when is it EI or IE? If you say E, like the letter E, then it's IE. If you say I, then it's EI. Wait, no, did I just get that backwards? D. No. If you say E, it's just like this. You look at the second letter and pronounce it. The little trick for most German words, it works. What's this last one? Or no, not last one, fourth one. That's the tough one. Go to the last one first. What is the last one? Who said Michael? You are correct. Because we have a conjugated substrate that has no alpha protons, so you know for sure it's going to be the one that's attacked. The part we need to discuss when we get to this is, by having a nitrile here, this makes it a little bit more acidic than normal, which makes the base softer, which makes it exactly the type of base that wants to attack a conjugated system. What is the last reaction? Aldol, because don't get thrown off by the fact there's an alkene. It is not conjugated. So it's just a regular old aldol condensation. Let's look at the answers for these. And I'm going to do them in reverse order because I want to do mechanism, which might take me a little time. And if I run out of time, I already had planned to do the stork-enamine carefully at some point anyways. So if we have to do it Wednesday, we will. Let's do the last one first then. Can you all hear okay with the fan on? Okay. Because I can't hear you, so you have to project just as I am. Ben, question? You thumbs up? Thank you. Hey, you know, we may be teachers, evil, nasty chemistry instructors, but we need encouragement sometimes too. First step, number five, deprotonation, which to save time or just to highlight the fact that it's an enolate, I'm mixing in resonance with it. It is technically reversible because I'm using what would be called a weak base. It's not weak in general chemistry terms, but compared to things like LDA, it's a weak base. And because of that, and because it's similar in base strength to the enolate it's made, that's why I'm calling it a weak base. Now, then we have another molecule of the same thing. which is going to get attacked. Is it possible that we could get attacked through the end here? Maybe. I'll look up and see if it's possible. But it will not attack the alkene over here because it's not conjugated. So when it attacks that, you'll push it open. Remember, the compound that was a carbonyl reforms the carbonyl, the one that makes the enolate, that is. Here is the new bond at the alpha position to the now beta position. It is at that beta position that we initially have the negative charge. Count carbon so I don't mess this up. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. There we go. Remember that at a minimum, there is a next step where water is deprotonated by this. Could you say that again, please? Oh, thank you. Since I didn't include water, then I'll instead make it methanol because I used methoxide. We protonate that. We still have methoxide around, and so it is possible for another alpha proton to be removed. Remember that that happens as its own individual step. This is not an E2 elimination. And there's the product. Now, even if you didn't get the name, how many of you got the product correct? How many of you were even close? How many of you even got to that problem? Holy. How many of you read the chapter over the weekend? Oh, my goodness. You are making it so painful for yourselves. Okay, if you like it that way. Next reaction. I don't remember what the pKa of this is, but it's high enough that methoxide does work. And again, the point of that is that that means the base is weak enough that it would prefer to add in conjugate addition. So we're going to have deprotonation because we have methoxide. I'll put reversible for now. I better look up that pKa value, though, if we care about the arrow. Main point, though, is we've made an enolate, and we have one of these conjugated carbonyls. There's no alpha proton. And so we're not going to have it forming an enolate. So there is only going to be one type of product. Remember that the whole point is that we're going to have conjugate addition. So here it will attack the carbon of the double bond, the end of the molecule. gesundheit. So we attack the carbon, which no longer has a double bond. It's instead been moved to the position over, which is currently an alkoxide. And I could show it getting protonated, but then won't that immediately tautomerize? So why go through all that effort? Why not just show the enolate, which this is, grabbing a proton? Notice what we've made, a product with a carbonyl delta to the original carbonyl. Did I actually write down the way to recognize a Michael addition the same way that I did for Claisen condensation? I talked about the delta carbonyl. Some of you are saying yes, some of you are saying no. I'll just at least mention it in case I didn't write it down. Questions on either of the first two reactions? Yes? And I didn't do it for the second one, right? You're saying on this first one, when it attacked, you got a double bond and we got an oxygen negative. That's right. They're both right. How do you know? It's both, because it's a delocalized ion. So if you write it delocalized, that's fine. If you don't write it delocalized, that's also fine. But the point what? Because even if we write it like we did in problem 5, remember I had this discussion that I've still not found a more satisfactory answer for other than the squishiness of the ion or the thermodynamic spillability of the carbonyl bond, or there was one other reason I gave why alkylation tends to happen through the carbon instead of the oxygen. But most textbooks, what they do is they go through these extra steps where they say, okay, you deprotonate this, and then really it's got a resonance, and then they show the resonance coming back again to the negative ion. That's a lot of steps to write when you don't have much time to write stuff on an exam. So I combined the resonance step together with the deprotonation, and I combined the reformation of the negative charge with the actual attack. So I put resonance into both of these. I left resonance out in problem 4. But so what? It's the same reaction. I just didn't waste the time of writing resonance. So both are correct. The first one is more satisfactory in concept because it shows the enolate. But in terms of just mechanism, both answers are acceptable. Yes? The aldehyde does not have an easily removable alpha proton. It has, of course, a proton at the alpha position, but you already have the double bond in conjugation with the carbonyl. So the other hydrogens there that is there will not have that conjugation. So it does not have the same pKa as a regular alpha proton. There's a hydrogen there. It happens to be at what we would call the alpha position, but we don't call it an alpha proton in the sense it does not participate in any of these other reactions. Right. Yes?
So for the lone pair you show on the floor, so we can also show it was the enolate ion.
Sure. Both are correct. This is an enolate. Just remember our structure drawing, our way we draw structures is inadequate. So it's one or the other that we could draw. Which one you do doesn't matter. Yes. So conjugated means that each carbon in a row is got a p orbital or pi bond involved with it somehow. And so that all those p orbitals overlap. That is conjugation. If you notice at this bottom problem, right here, see there's a carbon that on either side of it has a double bond, but this carbon itself does not have sp2 hybridization, doesn't have a p orbital, doesn't have a pi bond. So it blocks any interaction you've got between the two double bonds. Whereas on this compound over here, the two double bonds, the carbon-oxygen and carbon-carbon, are not separated by anything at all. Now, there's one more possibility where one carbon connects two double bonds. And that's again a case where you don't have conjugation. Because if one carbon has two double bonds to it, the two double bonds are at 90 degrees to each other. And so there's no overlap, so there's no conjugation. So it's only in cases like this where you go from one carbon to the next, to the next, to the next, and each position is in its own double bond. That creates conjugation. Is that the question you asked? Why is it or why is it not? For reaction 5, I did bring up while writing it down that I'm wondering if the enolate itself, because the enolate it's conjugated, might be able to attack through this position. So this was a quiz question I asked before. Nobody even noticed that. Nobody asked about it. But as I wrote it down, I thought, ooh, somebody's going to notice that and ask about it. So I tried to head you all off at the pass. Except I think I confused you all. So I am going to look up and see if in addition it can come through this position. But as far as it, when it attacks here, notice that that carbon where I've got my pen right now is sp3 hybridized. So it blocks this double bond from interacting with that one. So it can't add to the double bond because it is not conjugated. Did that make sense a little more that time? If not, come to office hours today if you got time. Or drop by the afternoon lab. You're in the afternoon lab. You are morning, right? So drop by the afternoon lab if you have time. Other questions? Oh, wow. Okay, so question 3, you already have a full mechanism for in your notes. That's just the Diekmann condensation. The only difference between what this and what you have in your notes is there's one or two extra carbons in this one. Otherwise, the mechanism is exactly the same, and it let me at least write the product down. So I'll do that where I got room here. So product will be this. We started with 7 carbons. Oh, you can't see what I'm doing. We have 7 carbons. Remember that one of the two carbonyls will not be in the ring because it's not the carbonyl, both carbonyls that react. It's the one carbonyl and the alpha position of the other. So that means there's only going to be 6 carbons in the ring. Which means this is going to be the product. The way I wrote the problem, did I use an appropriate base? Is there any problem with me using this base? Transesterification will give me the same ester back then, won't it though? So yes, this may not be the best base to use in terms of how fast the reaction occurs, because you have to wait for the proton to be pulled off, because the pKa of the ester is what? 23, 24. How many of you have not yet memorized your alpha proton values? You realize your list of things you have to know by Friday has grown a lot since a couple weeks ago. So I'm assuming you all know your alpha proton values. What would be the approximate pKa of methanol? 16. So 24 versus 16. Not a good setup. In other words, the methoxide is way weak compared to this. But because the only side reaction that is possible is transesterification, and since that would give you just your original compound back again, then over time you could form the product. So it is not a bad base, but it's probably not the best base. Did that make sense, what I said? Now, number two, I'll come back to on Wednesday. We got just enough time for me to handle the Stork enamine synthesis. So, you all had practiced that because I indicated I was going to be asking you for the mechanism here in class. We are very low on time, so I won't actually carry through with that. But I'm going to assume you all are perfectly fine with the mechanism to get from this point to this point, because again, you were supposed to practice it. If you have difficulties getting to this point, then you need to ask me in lab or office hours, because it is a 12B mechanism. Moving on from here, there's the new part, which is what happens if when we have it attack something, like an aldehyde. Well, the lone pair on the nitrogen is what's providing the extra density to the alkene in the first place. And remember, part of the advantage of this reaction is that it allows you to do these kinds of additions on under relatively minor or mild conditions. So we've done the addition step of it. There's two things that will happen next. If we have some kind of solvent, which I didn't write one in the problem, but let's presume there's some kind of solvent there, some kind of source of hydrogen. Even if we assume there's maybe a little water around, something is there. And so that gets rid of the negative charge. But we still do have a positive charge on nitrogen here. How do we relieve that? Well, the same way that the enamine got formed in the first place. That a position alpha to the carbon nitrogen bond gets deprotonated and reforms the enamine. Because realize that intermediate with the positive on the nitrogen, that's exactly what you get when you form the enamine the first time. Now notice that is not an enol, because the double bond is not at the same position as the alcohol itself. What happens next is I say acid, water, and heat. Okay, so what happens? Well, acid and water, that's going to hydrolyze the enamine, which is a sequence of protonate, open attack, deprotonate, protonate, open attack, deprotonate. So protonate, oh gosh, what time? What I'll do, since it's just a 12B mechanism, protonate, open attack, deprotonate, I will finish writing this out in lab, and I will post it. I'll post it with this mechanism. Again, if you have questions about the mechanism, we've got Wednesday to be able to ask me. But let me show you that eventually what you're going to get is this. which is the same thing we would have gotten if we did just a plain old aldol condensation. And I'll show you that when we wrap this up on Wednesday. So I apologize, we ran out of time. I was trying to move fast, but I want to be complete at the same time I'm being quick. Section one, somebody wrote down, what was the page number for the lab? Was it 637? 637, so experiment three. Page 637 for the theory, page 638 for the procedure. Oh, 670. Oh, I got the numbers reversed. So 673. Sorry, a little dyslexia there. 673 for the theory, 674 for the procedure then. And it's preparation of benzocaine. So the title of the experiment in the syllabus is correct. The page number's wrong.